Hey, Dr. Drew here, and this is just a reminder that the discussions here are not a substitute for medical care or medical evaluation. This is purely for entertainment and education. We hope you learn something, but see your doctor, get proper medical care. Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Indeed, and welcome again.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, here we are again.
Jay Moore, MF-er. Welcome, man. It's been too long.
It has been too long.
Make your water look like urine, Jay.
I try to.
With the hydrolyte? Eventually, it will look like urine. It will be urine. More Stories podcast, hashtag More Stories, the New America's Lakers podcast.
I didn't name it, Drew. Come on.
Yeah, but it says something about Bob following, and I said, is Bob on that one? Bob's got a Lakers podcast?
Did you see last night's triple-double, youngest triple-double in NBA history?
Would he beat LeBron by like 5 days?
Was it only a few days?
Well, yeah, I mean, but LeBron didn't go through that pesky college song and dance. I'm like, sure, take my SATs and everything, right, guys?
That pesky college thing.
One year of college.
We were off the air over the mics were eating up. We were talking. We seem to keep talking about the sexual harassment stuff. I don't know. I guess it's boring for people. But
I don't think it's boring for people. Yeah. I think it probably fascinates people.
Well, let's get into it.
Maybe it's boring for you.
Let's get into it. Let's get into it.
You know, there's an argument to be made for sexual harassment.
For it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's unacceptable behavior.
Right.
But that's why we're all here. Because, you know.
There's a difference between harassment and being sexually aggressive. Right.
The only reason we were born is because like our moms were goosed in the ass by like our dad. Oh, Mr. Moore, you're a character. Stop it. And the rules have become so. Of course, like harassing a woman. I'm a feminist. I'd like to think.
Well, there's just two things going on though.
Bob, I'm talking to you.
I understand.
You have to just no.
No. No, go ahead. Because you could be from Alabama and you could be spot on with what you're saying.
No, you can't harass a woman, period. I mean, but I do a thing on stage about like, well, the harassment seminars, they get to the point of lunacy where they show you like a film of a guy eating a banana and he puts it down by his waist and he's like, hey, Wendy, what are you having for lunch? And then like some lady looks like Lisa Ann, the porn star, is usually the human resources lawyer. She's like, who can tell us what's inappropriate? I'm like, your outfit for starters.
Wow.
You shouldn't be the hottest woman I've ever seen in my life and like summons me. But yeah, it's a problem, obviously. And what frightens me is when you go, you know, this is no good, and then the first response en masse is, well, what if he didn't do it? It's like, well, what if he did do it? Maybe we should rethink this whole thing of reprogram ourselves to like, what if he did it?
I'm just fascinated by the duality of there's some people doing it and don't seem to suffer consequence, and then others, and there's no middle. Right. The thing that happened with Louis C.K., who I love, who I talked about several times on this podcast. I just love the guy. I think he's a genius. There is no room for forgiveness for him. There is no forgiveness in America anymore.
There used to be resurrection and sort of forgiveness. Like they would chop someone's head off and then like them to kind of be reborn. We don't have that anymore.
Even Michael Jackson had forgiveness.
Well, yeah, I mean, but listen off the wall.
It's like genius.
You kind of had to.
If somebody's that good, you can forgive them.
I think what America loves is an apology more than anything. Like, while we all hate Pete Rose is because he gave us the apology like 13, 15 years later. It's like, you know what? If you just apologize, if Louis came out and just apologized.
He did. Yeah.
He did.
He said, yesterday. I did this. There's no excuse for us. And I misused my. He hit every note and then like, yeah, off with his head.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Well, he had his show. Or his move, what got something got canceled of his?
Everything. Play, I think.
Everything. Yeah.
So, I mean, the forgiveness.
Did Pam Adlon's thing get taken out too? The Better Things?
No, he'll just be removed from it.
I see.
So,
well, if the title was unfortunate. It was a confluence of perfect awfulness. Like, if you're going to masturbate in front of, you know, women and the name of your show is like, here's Daddy.
Yeah, Daddy, where I love you.
I was like, oh no.
If
the name of the show was like, I'm sick, it'd be like, you know what? Let's just limp this across the line and see what happens. But he'll be forgiven. I mean,
you think?
Who hasn't been? Literally. In the annals of U.S. history, people that have like really done something like that, who hasn't been?
Fatty Arbuckle.
Well, yeah, because he died.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
You know, I mean, there's like Roman Polanski tributes, and he's a pederast.
Yeah, you're right.
Like, that they're like, weird. Hey, let's honor this guy. Like Woody Allen. Like, people, they don't care after a while. They just forget because it's just cicadas. They just noise.
No, but with the off with their head, like Roy Moore is the top subject du jour this weekend. And Roy Moore admits that he dated underage girls when he was 32.
Not underage. In Alabama, they're not underage.
14, oh, okay. 14, they're underage.
Right? No, he didn't. He claims he didn't date that girl, but he did date the three
teenagers.
Others who were 16, 17 yeah. and 18 and 19.
But what about her emails? It's because there's a counter argument that's nonsense. It's all just noise.
No, but
it's becoming noise. And so I
with
think
Louis, there's no counter. There's no, well, what? This is all like a Soros thing. And what about her emails? Why don't you investigate that? With Louis, as a comic, you're this lonely wolf. And there's no pack.
Well, there's no way to respond because people don't want to hear it. They don't care. The spin and the virality is all in the go get him, kill him. It's mass action. It's the mob.
What do you think
the
reaction
French Revolution,
is?
Jay.
Yeah.
There's an unhealthy thing, but Chrissy said, I find everything that I just read so repulsive. Doesn't surprise me in men. But I would still go see his comedy because he's the greatest comedian.
That
ability
to
compartmentalize, I think.
Is that good or bad?
Is it good or bad? I'm asking you.
I don't know.
Like if a football player does something terrible, right?
The guy who punched the girl in the elevator still plays football.
No, he's out. Ray Rice is out because it's on video. And if you hire Ray Rice, the video is going to follow him to your town.
I thought he played again. He didn't play again?
No, and he donated all of his checks to women's shelters. He subsequently married Janae.
The girl who he punched?
Yeah, they're married now and they're very happy together. And people go like, well, he can't be a running back anymore. Look at his numbers. And my argument was, if you're to the point mentally where you punch your fiance in the face, you're probably not doing well at work either. You know what I mean? Like, no matter if you're an accountant, you didn't carry a one or the decimal point got sloppy. Like, your whole life is so out of order if you're going to actually blast a lady in the face with your fist. Like, everything's amiss.
It is, but with football.
What did you think when you saw that video, Drew? Did it shock you or
yeah.
did it?
It did.
It is shocking. Yeah, he clobbers her,
and the fact that there wasn't
across the hallway
that there wasn't a cop and an ambulance there was stunning to me. It was just absolutely.
But that's just because we saw the video. We know that sort of thing goes on in America every night.
Right.
Joe Mixon's on the Bengals when he was at Oklahoma. He punched a girl in the face in a restaurant. That's on video.
So you're a big football guy, I can tell.
Yeah, I like football.
Okay, so did you hear Bob Costas' comments yesterday about the concussions? Mm-hmm. So eventually, Bob Costas did this seminar. It's great about the concussion thing, right? He said eventually it's not a matter of what doctors say and kind of confusing the issue of concussions. The decisions about NFL football will be made by suburban moms because they won't allow their sons to play football.
That's true.
And that has to scare the NFL.
Is this where you tell me soccer's the future again?
No, because the heading in soccer, they're saying, gives you a brain
My Uncle
injury.
Bob was one of the coaches of the Cosmos, like 1978.
You're kidding? When Pelé was on there?
Yeah, back in
You
Bauer.
Met Pelé?
Yeah, it was the first penises I saw. Do you swear here?
Yeah.
It's the first time I saw – you do refer
– You've seen Pelé's penis.
And Alberto, like all those guys. The first time I saw like cock ever, and they were all like these giant Brazilian uncircumcised things. I'm like, something's wrong with me. Like these guys – this is apparently what you're supposed to look like, and I'm short.
And without a penis.
Did you get therapy over that?
No, it was great. It was great.
Something to look forward to. You're 14.
Just having your hair tussled by a naked Brazilian with a roll of tar paper between his legs. How are you doing, kid?
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was good.
If people want to call, it's 323-649-8268. More stories. Hashtag more stories.
I will never forget that.
It was good. It was good times seeing soccer. I don't know any of the other teams that were ever in the NASL.
Yeah, no one does. They just know Pelé.
But so, I remember in 1978, people going like, here it is, soccer. And we just, as a country, keep going, nope. But I'll tell you why. It's the same reason hockey is never going to be up to like baseball and football and basketball. Because in soccer, with goalies, it's 2-1, 1-0. If there were no goalies, it'd be 9-8.
There's not enough scoring.
Yeah, but yeah, it's just there's so many guys running around. Yeah. We don't have the patience.
Yeah, it's 3 minutes of action packed into two hours.
0-0, but you got a point, you advance. Like, we can't compute, like, wait, we have to win. You know, everything has to be like the Normandy invasion victory.
So if you're a football fan, do you have to have an opinion about concussions? Do you have one?
I mean, it's a pretty broad.
Heard about the brain scan from the Hernandez kid, right?
Yeah.
They'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
And he ended up
we'd seen
murdering
stuff like it. It was
and,
bad, though.
Huh? They just turned the other cheek.
It was bad,
know?
Yeah.
They turned
bad.
Away from it. You know, like Junior Seau shot himself in the heart so his brain could be used to study
How
that.
How crazy is that, Drew?
Well, what we don't know, one of the things I have questions I'm
Drew's
asking.
Drew's a big football guy. I'm just trying to get the football. I'm not a big football guy.
No, it's a big problem.
What we don't know is what a brain looks like, really, that doesn't. Is there CTE in just other sports and just growing up male? You know, it could be.
Of course there are.
Yes,
but there's
not
people in other sports killing themselves and developing all these brain injuries.
No, I'm not saying it's there's not worse in the NFL. It's bad. I'm just saying
the worst.
Yeah, we just don't know how bad relative to other things.
I think it's probably second place to boxing because boxing they don't try for it at all. And when you have the brain like when somebody dies in the ring, it's the fight before it. Where you had the brain trauma,
oh, really?
And then you get hit again. Like was Benny Perrette was killed by
Boom Boom Mancini killed somebody, right?
Dukwu Kim, but that guy, you know, he left on his own accord. He died later. But I had a memory of him just being like carried out of the ring. And Ray Mancini was on the More Stories podcast. He goes, "No, he left.
He walked out."
And what's amazing is he said. How do you like study a fighter back then? It wasn't like this age of digital technology now. Like, how do you get film on a guy that fights in Korea? And he goes, I like three fights that I watched, and somebody told me when he has a girlfriend, he's the greatest boxer ever. When he doesn't have a girlfriend, he's a bum.
But Jay, you know, Bob and I have been getting pessimistic. We've been sort of talking ourselves into misery.
That's why I'm here, buddy.
And you seem optimistic right now.
Yeah. If you caught me yesterday or Friday,
well, it's right now.
It would have been very different.
Yeah. And we particularly are worried about how everyone is being pushed to extremes. No one's in the middle, or at least you don't hear from everyone.
You get crucified.
Who's hanging out in the
middle. I drift towards the middle now as I've gotten older. You get crucified by all my friends.
On both sides.
Because all my friends are
on either
liberal.
Side. You can get.
Well, I don't know a lot of them.
Yeah, well, you'll find them. They'll find you.
But it's shocking when your friends, your liberal friends you grew up with, crucify you for pausing and not making a judgment or having a centrist view. You know what I'm saying?
Well, they don't sound like real reliable friends.
No, they're my closest friends. They just live in that liberal bubble.
I
moved to Claremont. Maybe you didn't have all the info.
Like in the Inland Empire?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I've become more centrist from living in the IE.
But it's like the postmodernist, where logic doesn't matter, everything is a cultural construct. Our biology bears no influence on us. I mean, this is what's taking hold right now. And it's hard to listen to that. And people have gone into these extreme camps where everything is really just about power and nothing is about the human experience and flourishing and the things we should be worrying about. It's just renditions of power.
Being right. It's also
about
being
right.
That's
right. They'd rather be somebody, Scott Adams, you know, that
like
guy.
Atheists.
Huh?
Like atheists. Like just they're right.
Scott Adams is saying that the most important thing that the Trump resistors are feeling is that whatever he does, they want him to fail so they can be right. They don't care what happens to the country. They just need to be right.
The Trump supporters?
No, the Trump resistors.
Right.
They need to see him fail so they can be right.
Well, they see it often.
Period. but no matter what happens to the country or the rest of us, not important. Being right is all that matters. And it's like, ugh.
It's children.
That's what
Bob become. Said a really important word, and that's pause. You said the word pause.
Yeah. Stop and think for a second.
And it's like you're probably banging your head against the wall. And that's – I've said on like my podcast, like we all just need to pause because the earth is tilted towards inevitable inclusion. We've seen that like since the end of slavery to like Jackie Robinson to gay and lesbian rights to, you know, anti-Semitism.
So we're moving in an inclusive direction unless
– We have no choice.
Well, there's a counter –
It funnels that
there
way.
There's a force
in
of –
In Poland the other day, there was a counter –
And there's movement. Religious fundamentalists coming in that could sweep through and set up a caliphate that doesn't think that.
And, well, that's fine because time will prove that fundamentalist wrong.
Time well, see, that proven. I have faith in. I have faith.
Well,
like,
it has already. You have data to prove your faith.
Let the Charlotte people, the tiki torture, speak. because an intelligent person who can decipher facts and information can go, you're nuts.
That's the way it's supposed to
work. Instead of stop them from talking.
Yeah, dialogue is supposed to be how it works. That's how you bring ideas into the light.
You guys are in the traffic now. You were in it. You're just like the people you're talking about because I have no empirical data to judge either side of the argument. You're just telling me everybody's nuts and they don't.
No, for just what we keep hearing and hearing.
You had the Trump thing. And Bob's just telling me his friends just live in this liberal bubble, but there's no – you haven't given me like any scenario. But you're really up in arms about it. I just came in off the street. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But I choose not to play.
The example – okay, I'll give you a concrete example. Addiction, right, is a big subject in America. 500,000 people have died from prescription drug overdoses in the last 10 years.
Think about that number in this country.
500,000.
Yeah.
So the centrist view is like, hey, we need to address this. And what happens is the things from the right and the things from the left pull to what is the solution to it, right? I'm also interested in what caused it, right? This hopelessness and helplessness that when you look at the opiate epidemic and where the death is.
Don't forget where you are. You see how Bob's speaking more slowly now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's you and me just talking.
You like that better?
This is the pause.
Yeah. I'm obsessed with why these children feel hopeless and helpless and want to die. Because when I talk to them, they don't care if they live or die. And it's a different mentality than the rock musicians that you dealt with that don't – they'll say they don't care if they live or die. But they really do. These kids really see hopelessness, helplessness, multi-generational – this country's gone the wrong track idea. You know, that's the interesting thing about it. Whether Trump is president or Obama is president, 67% of the population believe this country's on the wrong track. I believe it's on the right track. We just need to have dialogue and believe in democracy.
Why do the left and the right get into a conversation about addiction? Like it
because
like
they because it's it, it you can't not face it in government.
Everything gets politicized on both sides. Everything, even medical issues.
Well,
everything.
That I know, you know.
No, I don't mean healthcare. I mean how you approach a medical problem or a psychiatric problem.
But who, like left, right, what are the arguments against what you're trying to find? If you're, hold on real quick.
Yeah.
If you're seeking knowledge, there's no opinion against you seeking knowledge.
Yes, logic doesn't exist. It's a white male with his point of view.
See, the centrist
point
view,
of view. Hold on.
With
hold
his
on.
White hold privileged on. Point of view hold smeared
his
over
point
his
of view
thinking.
Is I want to know.
But he can't
why.
Escape. He cannot escape his white male privileged perspective, and his logic will be flawed. And so it's just another. He's just another
well,
misogynistic
I'll tell you, can I speak
racist.
For myself? Okay. Yeah. I believe there are many solutions to it. There are these fractions that believe there is only their solution for it, and the other side who has a completely opposite solution are idiots and wrong and vice versa.
Right.
Right? I'm saying the arguments are harm reduction, absence-based, 12-step-based sobriety, psychotherapy, religion. I want us to use all of them.
Yeah, the answer is yes.
Yeah. Well, that's not what's going on. Right. It's a one or the other, and they fight amongst themselves right or wrong. And, so, well, and I got to admit, I was one of those people fighting for abstinence.
Whenever anybody gets black and white in their thinking, I'm not talking about race, just in terms of digitally, you know, A or B, black or white, right or wrong, those are primitive thought processes as opposed to weighing out the middle ground where things are in certain perspective. Yes, it could be A and a certain perspective could be B, and maybe there's a ABC together that we can sort of find together that's a better solution.
And you can't find a solution in this rigid oppositional thing.
Yeah,
I'll give you
an
example.
Yeah, you can.
Well, I was
– you of all people.
My idea was that Suboxone shouldn't be used for young people because you're sentencing them to a drug that they're like methadone, right? I've changed my tune over the last 5 years because that's the leading cause of death for those young people. So if this drug keeps them alive long enough to grow up to become more fully realized and then they get off that drug, that's a middle of the road solution that I've evolved into, right? I want other people to calm down and evolve into let's have dialogue about this. And it's very difficult.
Are you not having dialogue with other people?
It's very difficult.
Do you go on college campuses? Do you ever do that anymore?
Often.
Do they allow you dialogue anymore?
If they don't, I sort of, like, I just have it.
Insist on it?
I just did a show and count. The lady goes, how come that kid in your story? I could tell at the after show meal, she wasn't happy. Yeah. It was this Asian gal, you know, the lady that actually hands you your check.
Right? Oh.
And she wasn't too happy. And little sticky fingers on that check. I'm like, all right, can I just, or you just let go of your end? And I can pay some lawyers. How about a Fresca? And I go, are you all right? Did you like the show? She goes, I had some problems with it. And I said, why? She goes, why did that kid outside Ralph's have to be a black kid? I go, because he was a black kid.
He
and
was.
She goes, but if he was a white guy, you wouldn't have said he was a white guy. I go, okay, I see what this is, and I appreciate you telling me that. 12% of the population is black. I live in the Pacific Palisades, which is white. So if a black guy is outside of Ralph's, he's an outlier by definition because only, let's say 20% of the population is black. A black guy and a white. If a white guy runs down your street at Watts Tower or in Compton, you're going to go, remember that day that white guy came streaking across the lawn? I'm the outlier then.
Yeah.
I can't change what happened to appease your sensibilities. This is what happened to me. A kid tried to sell me chocolate to help his high school football team get equipment. Yeah. He was a black kid. She goes, but why do you even have to mention that he was black?
You had this whole dialogue.
Because he was black and he was there. That's what happened to me. I'm telling you the truth. I'm reporting life.
But do you understand you're reinforcing stereotypes and you're damaging the minds of these
developing.
Kid's in
business for himself. It's a positive stereotype. He's helping out his team.
Let me defend Jay for a second. So a friend of mine and I were trying to start a music school at the Watts Towers about a year and a half ago. And we got there an hour. A
lot of drums.
And we thought we were going to. That was racist.
Yeah, that was racist.
How?
But we thought the meeting was at 12 and it was at 1. So we were at the Watts Towers, two white guys, just sitting on a park bench. And the same cars just kept driving around the block looking at us. And we felt, and we talked about it. This is what black people feel like in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
They just kept looking. They drive by real slow and, you know, and just look like, the hell are those two white guys doing?
You're the outlier.
There?
Louis
That's
C.K.
True.
Speaking of Louis C.K., he goes, white people are so like, he goes, you could put a white guy in Africa, and he would go, look at all these minorities. I don't think he said that in 18 years. Like, that stuff he doesn't use.
You know, think about social media too, which I think it's a no small margin is part of the problem. You last time I had you on the radio, you said something that stays with me to this day. You were saying that after the show, people get on Twitter and start jamming on you, and you said these people should not have that kind of access to you. It shouldn't be there.
Actually nicer to me.
You said,
because what I actually said was I did BlizzCon and I killed. It was 6,000 people, people from South Korea, people from, you know, Canada, Holland, and I killed. I did great. I felt good. I went to my hotel room, I opened my computer, and I checked Twitter to see how I did.
Yeah,
I was just there.
Yeah,
and people on the internet. It's the world's largest bathroom stall. You just write what you want. You get
always
up.
Always negative.
You walk out. Somebody else comes in. It's like, well, fuck you too.
Yeah.
They're just ghosts. They're idiots. They're just not. It's a troll is only as powerful as the attention you give it and feed it, and that the only sustenance is attention. But I was just on stage. That is a fundamental disconnect. It's like when you're at a basketball game, you look up at the scoreboard at the monitor, and you realize you've been staring at TV. And the court's in front of you.
People on
concerts looking at the concert through their phones as they record it.
Yeah.
It's just a habit you can break.
So they took after you, and you felt what?
I felt like indignant. Like, how dare you? I was there. It's good. Like, what makes you so great and this and that? And like, well, he was obviously inebriated. I'm like, I'm in a program. Wait a minute. Like, and it was inappropriate. That girl's probably a minor. I'm like, I didn't touch anybody. I'm like, and then it wasn't until years later that I realized what a fucking moron I was. They are always going to be there. That's the noise that you're arguing with about, you know, pill addiction and stuff.
Yeah.
You're an expert. You're an expert. You have lived it. You've processed it. You've met every walks of life.
But there's other experts out there. Listen, when
I had a
maybe
19-year-old girl in a group when I was just doing your, basically a synopsis of your brain lecture about the amygdala.
Yeah. Yeah.
She just raised her hand and goes, I disagree. 19-year-old girl. I go, who the fuck cares what you think?
St. Francis of Assisi.
Then you got to go call her parents and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, my God.
Maybe this is weird, but maybe you can listen more.
Yeah, I'm trying.
you know, like St. Francis of Assisi, let me understand rather than be understood. Maybe, you know, it doesn't mean you're going to gain anything from it, but you'll get a lot more of your stuff out if you hear them all out.
I'm trying.
But it really bothers you.
It's deafening because kids are dying and there's still no central idea. Are you going to D.C.?
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe.
So government policy is what dictates what the insurance companies allow and what goes on. So it all has to come from government and trickle down the mountain, right? And nobody in government in a year has had any way of addressing what's the next step. What are we going
to
do?
I don't think you believe that to be true. Well,
true because they dictate insurance care.
That's super, super, super macro. What you do, what I've seen you do firsthand, is micro one-on-one.
Yes.
You make people see how they can be well. You do.
That I can do.
That is being devalued dramatically.
You can't devalue that, Drew.
I can't, but the insurance companies and the
– I just came from the women's group in Palace. Like, there's no government entity that can make me not feel well.
No, we're talking about treatment over getting well. Yeah. That's the difference. We're trying to –
Bob to work his magic, his reimbursement, zero. For a doctor, a physician to open his prescription pad for 250 Suboxone patients, wildly reimbursed. And by the way, the government – mandating that doctors each take 250 opiate addicts and put them on a Suboxone. Say what you will about Suboxone.
I know.
250 opiate addicts. Okay. I couldn't manage 25, and I know what I'm doing. So that means you have people who don't know what they're doing, calling themselves experts, putting hundreds of people for one physician on these things, highly reimbursed because of the way the bureaucratic structure is. Yeah. And something really meaningful is just cast out.
Well, it's not cast out when you're in jail. That's how I really, you know, when somebody's in jail, they're more willing to participate in what I do.
But here's what I want to get at.
But we're talking about the general mass.
I want to get at that the other part that's been, as long as we're going like we're winding away here.
No.
The other thing that's been happening, I want to take a call in just a second as part of this, is that 12-step has been under attack for the last 5 years. Under attack. Assault. We'll talk about it. Let's take the call.
Big Pharma.
A lot of people. Let's take the call. This is Jamie from Seattle. Jamie.
Hey guys, first time caller.
What's happening?
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I love the stuff you say, Dr. Drew, Bob, about 12-step. It's interesting to hear your perspective from what I kind of look at and deem as an outside perspective, not guys within the rooms I'm talking to, but just hearing this outside perspective. And Dr. Drew, Bob, I'd love for you to address this question, which is I'm in recovery, do the 12 steps. I'm in those rooms. I'm 1 foot in, 1 foot out.
Because of God.
Right? I realize, and I call it the inconvenient truth, but, you know, and I'm just being open and honest.
Wait, you saw the inconvenient truth. Better. That's one of the things. You haven't seen that video, Jay?
I think he's referring to – hold on.
Go ahead.
You guys are hysterics.
Well, I just want to say I feel like better when I go to 4 to 5 meetings a week than I do when I don't. And Dr. Drew, you've talked about this. It's the invisible thing. It's the thing that you can't touch. It's intangible. There's some thing that happens there. And I was wondering if you could speak to that sub-question. If you don't have time to answer it, that's great. Bob, how do you work with sponsees in terms of talking to them about a spiritual connection, God, when they're not into that? They're having a tough time with that. They're trying to think their way through that. They're trying to...
Can I feel this, Bob?
Jamie,
what's up, buddy? It's Jay Moore.
Hey,
I'm good, buddy. I am so sick and tired of going to meetings and people that believe in God having to couch their belief in God or a higher power as they at mid-share, like, and I know it's not for everybody, but when I get on my knees and I pray to my higher power, and I'm not saying that's for... It's like... If the only person that had Viking in the Inland Empire was Christ of Nazareth, the rabbi, you would be the biggest believer in Jesus Christ of Nazareth, the rabbi, the Che Guevara of his time that caused problems for the czars, right, that kicked over money tables and said, there's a better way here. And if you go into a program like AA or NA, I can tell you right now, like anybody that comes in like, well, I got a big hang up with the God thing, like 7 out of 12 steps, whatever is mentioned, like, well, then you're not going to get well because it's so crafted as we understood him. It's past tense for crying out loud. I've been to meetings where guys, It was their tractor because they were farmers in Calgary. I was in an English-speaking meeting in France, and some guy goes, the room itself is the higher power. Us in this room is a higher power than before Bob and Drew and myself, and we all sat down. It's impossible to try to explain to a newcomer God, because it's right there. And if they want to get sober, they don't care about that word, that concept at all. You get to the point, Drew and I talked about this, it might have been 20 years ago, of disgust. I'm so disgusted with myself. God, it is. Because I fucking sicken myself with my addiction. I'm going the God route as I understood him. And you can't explain. I think your question is, how do you explain it to like an atheist or somebody, maybe an agnostic? Is that basically your question, Jamie?
Or somebody who's just struggling with the concept.
Well, yeah. Here's
well, they're not struggling with the concept. They're struggling with getting well. Because if you really want to get well, you won't care what the language is, because it is a 100% success rate if you do 100% of what is asked of you in the program. No, but I took a welcome chip March 14th, and I didn't drink. I was sober but not well for 19 years. I never did the steps. I never wrote them down.
And that's...
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's the key. That's the thing I'm trying to work on and am really interested in. The not drinking thing is great, but the getting well, the getting flourishing, as Dr. Drew calls it.
19 years.
I can give you some tips that I use. So obviously what in the modern context we label people narcissist and they're against having a higher power and all this kind of stuff. There isn't a chapter in the book called To the Believers. There is a chapter in the book written in 1938 called We Agnostics, right? And so the idea was alcoholics have always had resistance to accepting powerlessness and transformation, right? So it's not that that modern addicts, like you were saying, caller, are so new or different. I just have people read We Agnostics. I share my experience about it. I have them talk to people that have similar experiences and put it in a modern context. What was America like the Bill Wilson grew up in, right? So, you know, I grew up Catholic. I don't know. Where did you grow up?
Presbyterian.
So confession and the fourth step, and it's the same thing. It's a part of who I understand, making things right, getting it out in the open. So does therapy, says get it right, get it out in the open. There's more similarity than there is this black, white, that's not for me type thing. And I had to evolve into that too.
Jamie, right? You said you feel better if you go to like four meetings a week, right?
Yeah, he wants to know why.
Do you?
People. Yeah, and I wanted you guys to speak to that in terms of what Dr. Drew's talked about this before. And it's not just one alcoholic talking to another. There's this, for lack of a better term, this invisible force or something's going on there. Dr. Drew has eloquently spoken to that.
Well,
I
usually speak about what goes on between and amongst people. I just for some reason, you know, Adam Smith's invisible hand came to mind the way you talked about it, Jamie, and I'm perfectly happy with that metaphor. But that real change happens in the context of other people. And you don't, you know, the 12 step is a very deep connected way of evolving and changing in a structured relationship with your sponsor, but you can get little doses from the fellowship and from the community. Because there's a kind of a communion of like genetics and like pain and like understanding that is very reinforcing. You felt understood. You felt. I mean, feeling felt, feeling understood is like one of the most important things.
Talking about
you.
Harassment again?
No, not being. That's being
play,
felt.
Jeremy, do you play – Jamie, sorry. Jamie, do you play fantasy football?
No, but I'm a football fan.
Do you golf? What do you do like with other guys? Like, what do you do like when there's like six people around you?
Connection.
Yeah, I mean, physically, whatever. I work out a lot. You know, skiing. Yeah,
you just
mountain biking.
You feel good after it.
Trail running.
You shared the like Drew was saying. Like you shared that experience. Like if you play fantasy football, you have a fantasy football draft. You get like 12 bozos in somebody's living room with a big dry erase board. You drive home like my team sucks, but that was fun.
Yeah,
and just because you shared, you know, the unspoken thing in that room is a connection, a shared thing.
Yeah.
Here's something that happened. I will say that I do think because of rehab, the sponsor role is so overemphasized. It's everybody. There used to be this guy, Joe Riley, at Monday nights. I just loved seeing him. It brightened my mood, this guy. And he was an old-timer, like 40 years sobriety. He used to, when he first started realizing...
There is a contagion to some of this, too.
Just seeing him. He wasn't my sponsor. He was just this great old guy. And he started to realize I worked in treatment. And he said this joke, and then, you know, he got older and older and kept saying the same joke like he'd never said it. Yeah. But he said, I hear you work in those places. And I was like, yeah, I guess rehab. And he's like, yeah, you know what us AA say about those places? And I was like, no, Joe, what do they say? And he said, those places are for where you go when you're thinking about getting sober. And AA is where you come when you decided you want to.
Was that Joe at Los Angeles?
No, this is other Joe at Father Terry's meeting.
Yeah.
And it just like, but he just made me feel good when I would walk in that room and I would see that old dude.
12 step is
that's when it comes to the magicalness of
it. When it comes to abstinence as the goal, and I would encourage, I would say flourishing is the side effect. 12 step does better, or in every study, better or as well as any professional interventions ever found.
And it's free.
And it's free. And if you're really a bad addict and need somebody to sit on you and watch you, there's no way to – you can't afford that, but people in the program will do that.
Well, in NA,
if you're an addict, yeah. Well, that's when you need that.
If you're a CEO, the 12 steps are – if you're not a drunk, the 12 steps are great for you. Mm. Like a fearless moral inventory of yourself. Like that's
what's
who –
what's wrong with that?
Who's not – you know the nature of my my wrongdoings and stuff and a higher consciousness. Like that's just good for you.
That's what therapy is. You have to, you're trying
that's
to,
what I see very you, much parallels yeah. between all of these good well, things.
Both
religion,
at the same time,
therapy, AA.
Therapy is somebody who's really skilled at getting close to you and connecting and following your feelings. But ultimately, the things you're ashamed of need to come up in that relationship.
Yes.
And that's the process. What you're ashamed of, guilty about, it's got to be like psh, there.
So 19 years with no steps?
None, nothing.
What'd that feel like about year 15?
Fine.
It did?
Yeah, just I didn't know.
Because you hear that it gurgles up just more and more. You could just push it back down.
I never had an urge to drink.
No, I don't think you do.
I just got sick.
Angry or depressed?
Angry. Both. I collected resentments my whole life, like stickers on a cartoon suitcase.
That's not good.
And my whole, now that I'm like excavating, it's like you just discover more character defects and you get pretty blue. And then I'm 47 years old. I'm in an apartment for free that somebody's being nice enough to let me use. The money, like, it's gone. It's gone, gone.
Yeah.
You know, I'm paying lawyers out of my son's college education. I got fired from two jobs because they thought I was high. And they're like, is he okay? Is he on something? Like, the Boys and Girls Club, a corporate gig. Like, that's, like, my thing. Like, that's like the Jerry Maguire going into the living room. Like, you give me a corporate gig, I'm your guy. I did the Betty Ford Clinic Saturday. Like, that's my thing.
Yeah.
I do corporates the best. And they're like, is he on something? I'm like, all right, apparently I'm behaving in a way where I go, that was great. And they want to know if I'm on something. So it was just anger and anger and sadness and sadness and anger. Like my marriage went south and just I never worked the steps. I never had any infrastructure for what happens when the wheels fall off.
Yeah.
When life as you know it isn't life as you know it. When the towers come down, you're standing there at ground zero like – There's an infrastructure in place to deal with something so horrific. But when you are no longer married and you have a child in the mix that's regressing and you see that in front of your eyes and that sadness, there's nothing – depression's brand new to me. It's like a year and a half old. It's Friday. I saw somebody downtown at Kaiser. Visiting hours, by the way, 7:30 to 8:30. Like they're not screwing around.
No, yeah.
You know the hospital I'm talking about? And if I didn't have a show last night, I would have asked him for a bed. I was at, like, I was gone. I was so low. And then today I went to that meeting and I saw Mindy, who used to work at the Cliffside. I don't know if you know Mindy. And she's just talking to me on the sidewalk. I saw a buddy of mine who just gotten really well. And I was like, I went to go get breakfast with him in Malibu. And my assistant Corey goes, are you on your way to Drew's? I'm like, yep. U-turn. PCH. Like, of course. What do you think? But it wasn't alcoholic behavior.
Yeah.
Were you headed to Duke's?
No, that's where I fish. They watch me haul calico sea bass from a paddleboard at Duke's. Oh, I'm Poseidon outside of Duke's, bro.
Calico bass, you shoot it with a spear? What do you do with calico bass?
No, I fish like a human being, Drew.
With a pole?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
How'd you spear
calico bass? We used to spearfish calico bass. They don't usually bite. That's why.
They bite. I'll take you out there. Right. I know the spots, man.
Right outside of Duke's?
They're not biting, they're not there. I'm telling you, outside of Dukes, but that tide comes in. You got to keep your head on a swivel. You'll get demolished.
Because Dukes, after 12 set meetings, Dukes is the only place I can afford to go. And all these other people are going to, what's the sushi place?
Nobu or something.
And, yeah, Nobu. They're going to Nobu after noon meeting. I'm like, I'm going to go to Dukes. Anybody going to Dukes?
You know, it's Bob, salt of the earth, you know? Colin Quinn and Bob like to go to Dukes. You know, there's a guy paddleboard fishing. I like that every time I reel in a calico sea bass, like 3 pounds, somebody's eating, and I know I'm completely disgusting them. Like, that's how flapping around.
That's how it really comes out.
Yeah, I put it like a sack on the paddleboard. It's flopping around, and they're just putting it into their mouth.
You have to hit it.
No, mackerel and barracuda.
Are you close to Colin?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't talked to him in a while, but if we saw each other, we'd get big.
Is Artie okay? I worry about him. I worry about Andy.
Andy, everybody should worry about.
Yeah.
Andy, phone home.
He does. I mean, that's the thing with Andy. That's why he's so fascinating. He does phone home.
Actually,
I love you, buddy.
A friend of mine got sober from that. So we had a band called Thelonious Monster, and then somebody asked us to do a reunion show. We hadn't played in like 6 years, and we couldn't find one of the members. So we put in the LA Weekly phone home. And he saw it, and he realized none of us knew where he was or what he was doing. It made him so sad. He went to Hazelden and got sober, and was sober for years.
That's
and years.
Crazy.
One of the best band names of all time, by the way. Seriously, one of the best band names ever. Thelonious Monster.
Really?
Everybody, as all time goes on, they always call me Thelonious Monk, and I've corrected people for decades.
Band. That's a
and then finally,
band.
Now pianist. I just accept it. Like. I know what you mean.
They got the Thelonious right.
Yeah.
Where'd they come from, Thelonious?
From Monk. We all
love from the jazz band.
Yeah.
But where'd it originally come from for them?
No, it's a man.
It's a guy. That was his real name. His mom named him. Now, I believe she had some issues. She named her only son Thelonious Sphere Monk in like 1930.
Ooh.
Like, think about that.
Yeah.
That's crazy name.
Had to be earlier than that, didn't it?
Yeah, maybe 20.
Because A Fine Day in Harlem, I think is the documentary.
Want to look that up? When was Monk born? Yeah, he was born in Harlem, in Manhattan. And his name is Thelonious Sphere Monk.
Any group photos, he would always like that. There was a documentary, I think, A Fine Day in Harlem.
Yeah, that Jabbar made. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar made that movie.
He made that?
Yeah.
And it's like, your job, if you really want to work here, I don't know, magazine, maybe Vanity Fair, something, he's like, he bugged the shit out of these people, whoever the guy is. And the guy goes, I want you to get all these jazz musicians on a stoop in Harlem and take their photo. Go. And the guy did it.
Yeah,
it's a real famous photo.
Everyone's there.
Oh, well, it's like got like
at Billie Holiday. Yeah, Monk.
And it's 10 in the morning. And the guy knew he's going to catch them before they go to bed. Like rolling dice and eating and stuff. And Monk knew everyone would have a dark
suit. There he is. What year was he born?
He knew.
1917.
Yeah, it was way earlier.
1917.
He knew everybody would have a dark suit on, so he rushed home and he changed into a white suit. And in that photograph, he just stands out. He's only got a white suit. In that
See
photo.
If you can find that photograph, Nate. It'd be awesome.
Yeah, the photograph. Because, anyway.
It's been a fine day in Harlem, a great day in Harlem.
So, what people don't know about Red Hot Chili Peppers, the Red Hot Peppers are also a jazz band. They're also a jazz band, Louis Armstrong. King Oliver and his Red Hot Peppers, I think it was called, and Louis Armstrong was the trumpet player.
I have to change while we're looking for that picture. Change gears for a second, and because we're gonna take a break.
We got to do a Hydralyte. I just had a whole bottle of it, and it was great.
All right, it is fall, and your immune system is about to get tested, everybody. Not only does the changing weather mark the start of cold and flu season, it's also back to school time when kids become walking petri dishes. While catching something may be inevitable, there is no excuse for letting yourself get dehydrated in the process. So when you're wiped out with cold or flu, the first piece of advice, always to drink plenty of fluids, but we seem to forget that. Now, once you've started feeling dehydrated, it's already too late for water or sports drinks. Rapid rehydration requires the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water, and nothing gives this like Hydralyte. Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science, and it is the simply best rehydration product I've found in this country. Hydralyte comes in great flavors, orange, berry, lemonade, and it's available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or what I prefer, those effervescence tablets. You just drop in a glass of water or a bottle of water. Off you go. It's like your own portable IV, but you can do it enterally. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-use, easy-to-follow instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for a limited time, our listeners can save 30% on Hydrolate. Just click the banner on our site, drdrew.com, 30% off. Great deal. Do it.
It is really good, by the way.
Hydrolite. Great. I just drank a whole
gallon. If Colin can be so brave, I might even call it effervescent, right?
It is an effervescent tablet. We like
the only guy I know you pull off, you know, a Huck Finn hat. Yeah. Walking around with, you know, I don't know, shoes from like Dropkick Murphys, you know?
Yeah, this was New York City, 1980.
Oh, my God, look at that picture.
Isn't that amazing?
It was a great day in Esquire magazine, a great day in Harlem, and Monk's got the white suit on, and all the neighborhood kids pile up. Well, it's radio, and we're pointing to a photo.
We're pointing to a photo.
We'll put it up on the website.
Yeah, put that up.
Listen, I'm doing a special with Elizabeth Smart.
You know Are you really? Yeah.
Yeah. She was abducted when she was 14 and held as a sex slave.
Weird religious
if thou
guy.
Sayeth was
yes,
the sentence that sprung her.
That's right. She was denying who she was for an hour after she was rescued. She was so brainwashed. And finally she goes, thus sayest thou or something, if thou sayeth, meaning that's who I, you know, if you say that's who I am, that's who I am. And that's
a hip cop, by the way, to pick on.
Yeah. And because she was so convinced they would kill her, that they would send – the cops would send her back to this maniac and that he would kill her and then kill her family. So she was just completely – anyway, I just remind everybody that is going to be Monday, November 13th, premiered last night. I'm sorry, today, Monday, 13th of November. Two-part doc aired last night. The second part tonight at 9 – 7:30 and 9, and then I do a follow-up interview with she and her dad that was really quite moving for me. You can check it out at aetv.com.
Where does she live now?
Hold on a second. Susan wants to say
Wait,
something.
He got that
Claremont.
Wrong. It actually
Claremont.
Airs. Okay.
I thought so I saw her around.
It actually airs tonight.
That's what I said.
And
7:30 and 9.
The first part, and then tomorrow night, Monday, the 13th, the second part. But if you miss the first part tonight, you can watch
Nobody
it tomorrow
watches
as well.
TV. Just go on
no,
there.
No, this they're
going to
watch. I'm putting this into my
good
notes.
One.
I'm telling you, it's a great doc. It
oh,
is
it's
great.
Amazing.
I made them watch it. It was so amazing. And then when I felt privileged to talk to her after really hearing what she went through, and it was very moving.
AETV.com.
AETV.com.
And then next Monday on the 20th, Drew has a special where he
Oh, they're doing it a week later?
Yeah. So you can catch up with this. You can put on your DVR.
No, you know, they told me it was going to follow the second episode immediately.
No, it's the 20th, according to what I have been writing. But
maybe they turn that into
but,
a 2 hours.
Well, they want to make sure everybody sees it this week. Yes. And
that's an odd call for a talent booker.
Which one?
Elizabeth Smart?
Yeah.
If Dave Navarro's not going to call us back, get Elizabeth Smart.
and the girl from Italy, too. The girl from Italy had a documentary, too.
Yeah.
But Drew, I'm just picturing, like, you know.
No, there's an agent for those people.
Really?
You could do a whole 10 minutes on it.
It's, well, I mean, it's not like a
We live in that world. You know, that one guy that managed all of our clients.
Oh, yeah. There are people.
It's a weird other. Yeah. It's not a comedy show business, but it is another world with its own agents and its own world.
How do you make money as an agent of abduction? Like, you don't pay her for the interview.
No, but it's not just abduction. It's you know, the girl from Italy.
Right. I can't remember her name right now. I can see her as clearly as day. Anyway.
I swear to God, there are. They're book agents in that space. If we can call it a space.
But
it's a space. It's all space.
Anyway, she is married now with two kids and married a Scottish guy. She went on her mission to Paris. I mean, she did the mission and everything. She was
Mormon mission?
Yeah. She was that sort of able to sort of manage her life. It was amazing. Just amazing what she – oh, my God. You talk about –
it sounds like a Hillenbrand novel, like just the overcoming of
yes.
No matter what.
Yes, and the trauma and dissociation and the sort of the how her body reacted to all these things and what she did afterwards is remarkable.
Is she – did she have children? Did she have children with the
– No, not with him. Not with him. No. That was the other one. That was the one that was held for a couple of years. Amanda Knox is the one. No, Amanda Knox is the one from Italy.
Dude, but we could start an agency in that space.
I need the money. I'm going to find like a kid actor. Some like precocious Shirley Temple, Mason Reese. I don't know, gang.
I don't know.
My son watches these shows. I can tell when my son's been watching like Nickelodeon because I'll go like, do you want to take the kayak out? Yeah. I'm like, ugh. Who talks like that? He goes, I do. Can we go out in the kayak? I'm like, what is that? Somebody's been watching.
That's Disney.
Drake and Josh.
Yeah.
Two worst names in the history of a title, Drake and Josh. Say that fast.
But listen to, this story. So the dad goes. She said 4 hours before it's just that. So stayest thou or whatever it was. They put her in a sort of a. They decompress her for a couple hours. Reunites her with her family. She goes home Everything's fine.
No treatment? No nothing?
Everything's great. No nothing. Goes home in her own bed, sleeps in that bed that she was abducted from that night after 9 months of just, I mean, the breathtaking abuse. But here's the interesting part. When I saw that, I thought, oh, boy, oh, no. And the parents were like, she had no control over her life, and she didn't want to see a therapist. We wanted to give her control. Turned out, listen to this. I learned this from talking to her, that she did go see. First thing they did, they said, well, it's going to be too traumatic for you to go to court and face these guys. So I'll tell you what. We'll set you up with a psychiatrist. They'll do your interview, and then they'll represent you in court.
For the court, right.
These idiots interviewed her with such – they sort of manhandled her.
Re-traumatized her.
Completely. Made her re-experience the whole thing, questioned the veracity of what she was saying. Because these were forensic psychiatrists trying to build something.
That was their job, yeah.
They weren't doing anything therapeutic. So her now in her head, this is what these mental health guys do in a room alone. I am not going near a middle-aged male treating me like this. No more. Uh-uh. And I thought, oh, my God, of course not. God bless her that she still was able to find her way out. She did get certain kinds of treatment and stuff later and things. But isn't that crazy?
The church must have stepped in.
I'm sure they did help her. Yeah, they do. They do.
Church is good.
Yeah, I when I was doing stand-up in Salt Lake City, the guy Keith Stubbs that runs Wise Guys, there's two of them up there, and his wife like brought pies to the show and like offered to watch my son. And I'm like, that lady's the night. I go, you know what? I've been like clacking away at Mormons without knowledge. Like, you can have all your secret underground that you want. You're really nice and beautiful and good people. Like, you don't want anything from me. They're not going to convert me.
It's true.
I'm in for the weekend. It's not like, so when you come back, you're to come, right? Like, no.
You got to see the South Parks on this. They're so good.
Oh, yeah. So the Joseph Smith stuff. Like, I'm not going to tell anybody. I have a printing press except him.
Well, no, I have a funny Mormon friend who will defend, like, oh, and the things you'd believe just because they're 1,300 years earlier or 1,800 years earlier, they're more true.
Well, here's what
it goes to your left and right discussion. Well, none of religion is binary. Religion is an invention that's placed over faith.
Yeah,
to steer people where you want them to go.
Yeah, it helps people. Or helps them live a better life.
Exodus, this way. Keep going to the east. Keep moving east. Keep going.
Helping live a better life, a good life. What's wrong with that? Well, but the South Park, though, sums it up perfectly.
Ask an atheist.
So across the episode, Kyle is taught the story of Joseph Smith. And by the end, he's like, I can't even hang around you people. And he was his best friend all through it. And all of a sudden, he just disconnects from the Mormon kid. So, of course, the four of them are at the bus stop at the end of the series. And the little Mormon kid comes up and he goes, oh, hey, Joey. Hey, Kyle. Where you been, Kyle? Well, you know, that stuff you guys told me, I can't hang around with you anymore. I don't believe that anymore. He goes, really? Okay. Well, you're right. We believe some crazy stuff. And those stories, they're pretty wild. But because of those stories, I have a great life and a great family. And if you can't deal with that, you just suck my ball. And Carmen goes, that kid is cool.
Yeah.
Right? Did I get that about right?
You nailed it. Yeah. It's so good.
There you go.
What's your Twitter, Drew?
Dr. Drew.
I'm going to retweet this, Elizabeth. Yeah, this is an important thing. Like I'm looking online about the A&E.
Yeah, it's a good thing. I was very pleased with it. And privileged. I got to talk to her dad, too. And that poor guy, oh, my God, what he went through is unbelievable.
Yeah, you ain't lying. I mean, you got kids. You got beautiful kids. You have a beautiful bride. That's why.
That's right.
But you're the hottest man alive.
No, I don't have the
– Not to be
nice. I collected some good genes over here.
Just a side note, right? When I see these, what comes to be these religious fanatics who kidnap women and have children with them, you can pretty much spot them. How do they go unspotted for years and years and years and decades?
Grooming. They're experts.
No, but to the police, I mean, they all have like Moses beards, right? And they walk around with a harem all wearing white. Like, doesn't anybody question them?
Well,
or, like,
they
follow
wear white when
and...
they're grooming.
What?
They don't wear white till they get back inside the teepee. When they're out grooming, they're dressed like, you know,
no,
John Wayne Gacy.
Her guy was weird looking.
That's really wacky. You
know, and they're known by police. How do they not know they've got like a 14-year-old girl stuffed in
there
a garage somewhere?
There was no profiling
somewhere.
Back then. We weren't profiled. Like, nobody.
But you also don't know where he goes when she's gone. You just see him around.
And there's a bunch of those guys maybe like, in Utah.
There's a guy, you go to this Lakers games, right? There's a guy that sits with a bullhorn on the corner right in front of the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar statue every night.
No, that's
every
Kareem,
night,
actually.
With a Kareem, right.
That is him.
But there's a guy with a bullhorn that just screams out at you as you're trying to go to a basketball game about the end is coming and Jesus and all this stuff. I want that guy, like, check him out. Check out what's going on in his life. Because that's nuts to stand out there. You ever seen the guy?
It's profiling, man.
Yeah, now that we are allowed.
That's your right-wing Inland Empire brain.
Oh, there right? I am. You know,
your liberal
with
bubble
those
friends.
Logical ideas.
I don't know. Maybe the guy's just got a bullhorn. You know, repent or die. You know, the guy's on Sunset Boulevard. It's like, Jesus died for your sins. No, Jesus died because he was convicted of heresy.
Dude,
if you want to go verse for verse, I'm your guy. Let's do this. Let's do it. He was convicted of heresy for saying he was king of the Jews by the Romans. He didn't die for my sins.
Oh, my goodness.
We're going to take a little break. We're going to keep this going on Facebook, so don't leave on Facebook. But the podcast will continue with Jay Mohr next Monday. Also, next Monday we'll have the interview with Chris.
Yeah.
Yes, from the last house, which is the sober house that Bob and I kind of did.
Yeah, yeah.
So, all right, we'll see you next time, and we're going to keep this going on Facebook, so don't go anywhere.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.
Now, there are a lot of factors that lead to recovery and particularly success in recovery, but programs that challenge patients, that don't gratify them, that often is the most effective. And that's what we like about Last House Sober Living in Los Angeles. Last House, structured program based on accountability and your actions, living a certain kind of life. Not like those luxury treatment centers that kind of feed the narcissism, entitlement, selfishness. Last House works to combat the learned helplessness some of these millennials have. Also, device dependency. A lot of places shrink from that one. And the codependent family system that needs a lot of help. The community challenges addicts with disciplinary systems that teaches them consequences for their choices and actions. The program isn't easy. In fact, it's quite difficult. It's supposed to be difficult. It's hard work to recover. Their theory is, much like diamonds, recovered addicts are forged under pressure. If you or a loved one is looking for a program that aligns with so many of the characteristics we believe lead to a successful recovery, please have a look at Last House. Learn more, visit thelasthouse.net. Again, that is thelasthouse.net. Visit them today.